Welcome to the Product Podcast by Product School. Here's a preview of today's talk.
It's important to have goals that are slightly difficult to achieve. You know, if you have a goal that's easy, you will lose focus. The team's morale will go down. If people think it's too easy, they won't put in their best. But if it's slightly harder, right? If it's slightly out of reach, that is a great thing. And in fact, if you tie that with this accountability tracking thing, where you're not using goals to decide people's promotions or to decide people, to decide how much bonus they're going to get, but instead to use that as to have frank conversations of, how the team is doing, what everyone is working on. If you tie these two things together, that's when the magic happens, That's when, for example, say your goal is not to increase users by 10%, but to increase users by 100%, and you tie that with, accountability tracking and transparency, that's when you will think outside the box.
In this podcast, we teach our listeners valuable lessons about product management and transform them into thinking like a product manager. We teach product management, coding, data analytics, and blockchain in 14 campuses worldwide, including San Francisco, New York, and Seattle. You can find more information at productschool.com. Join our Slack community of 25,000 professionals to network and stay tuned for our upcoming events.
My name is Salah Ahmad. I have been at Microsoft for about 4 years now. And before Microsoft, I ran product and operations at a small telecom startup out of DC. And before that, I was a management consultant, which is what about a third of my class at Yale did. So, that's what everyone used to do back in the day. Not that long ago, though. I'm not that old. Our topic today is prioritization and planning. And the existing product managers, hopefully, you will appreciate that prioritization and planning is a core part of a PM's job. And, teams that do this well succeed, and teams that don't do it well, they are all over the place. And this is something that the higher up you go in your career, the better you should get at. You have more input in it the higher up you go, and it's a key a skill set that everyone of us should learn early on in our career. For the students, this is a very popular interview question. So, if someone asks, how do you prioritize or what should you build? You can sort of rote learn this it works sometimes. Today we'll be talking about the problem, right? What to build. As a PM, as a team, you guys have a lot of requirements, a lot of, a lot of people want your attention, a lot of people want your time. It's not always easy to figure out what should you be building. So there are two different problems, right? One is what exactly should you build, and one is how do you prioritize? What do you build first? So we'll be focusing more on the second part of the problem, which is what you build first. And then we'll go through the process. We'll talk a bit about the OKR methodology, which is widely used at Google, for example, and it's also used at some nonprofits. And it depends on the company. Like Microsoft, a lot of teams use it. Using the OKR methodology, we'll walk through how we can use that to prioritize our roadmap. And basically how to become a baller PM, how do you use OKRs to win, to get really good at, to get good at your job and to feel good about it too. We'll close with some other things that you need to do to make sure that you build the right things and you build them at the right time. So the problem, everyone knows this. If you asked your engineers, or if you asked a group of people, hey, what should we be building next? You know, everyone will have their opinion. Sometimes, you know, there will be some features that bubble up that, you know, everyone will agree that, yes, we should absolutely go build this. But oftentimes, there is a difference of opinion, right? And depending on how experienced your team is and how well you know your team and how good the job your leadership team is doing, it's not always clear, you know, what is it that you should be building. So your customers, you know, will have your input. Your dev team will be giving you opinions. We should do this first. We should do that first. Your manager will have a point of view. Your partner teams will be like hounding you. You know, they'll be like, oh, please do this for us. And if you don't have a clear framework of how you decide what to build, then you will be completely lost. And this happens all the time. I mean, I'm sure the product managers here can attest. Like, if you are not transparent about how you make decisions, and if you are not communicating to your partners, to your manager, to your, you know, devs, to your customers, how you decide what to build, you will be in trouble. And so transparency is important, and we'll walk through the framework. How do you tell everyone? You know, how do you decide what to build? You'll get into situations like this where everyone is just like, everyone has their opinion, and you know, they get very passionate about it. And not only that, not only do they get passionate about it, but people will always be questioning you. You know, even if say you have communicated a roadmap. After every, like, maybe after 2 weeks, maybe the next month, maybe after 6 months, people will be like, but why did we decide to do this, right? Or people will question you, you know, as a product manager, depending on how much influence you have over your team, people will question you, why did you make this call? Or if things don't work out, that's especially when, you know, these conversations come up, right? Why did we do this? It's your fault, you know? So these are the sort of conversations we want to avoid. This is a very, I just want to get started here. Just a quick thing, especially for the students here, before we dive into the framework. Generally, when we're talking about what to build, what features to build, there are many ways that you come up with it. This is not the focus of this talk, but you should have a good idea of how this works. Generally, a product manager, the way we come up with features are product manager should be the expert in the customer. You are the person in your team who knows best what the customer wants. This is something that your engineering team solely relies on you to do, right? You should be expert. You should know how the customer uses the product. You should know what the problems that you are solving for the customer. You should know how they use the product. Oftentimes, good product managers, they talk to customers often. Many product managers talk to customers every day. And it's a good way, you know, to gather requirements to understand what's going on. Then there are other things that PMs do, and you know, the PMs in the room, they can attest to this. You know, you talk to your sales, to the people who are selling the product. You look at your telemetry, you look at how your usage is doing, you look at your data. You talk to your leadership, you know, your VPs, your CEOs, if you're in a startup, your directors, they will have a point of view, you know, and generally, there will be strategy documents that you can get your hands on that they will, you know, outline exactly what you are doing, and they will outline why you are doing it. So a good PM, you know, keeps tabs on all of these things, and they know what's going on generally. They know what the customers want. They know what the competitors are up to. So how do you rationalize all of this, right? How do you, this is a good example. Say this is the end of year now, right? This is the end of the financial year. A lot of teams here in Seattle, at Amazon, in Microsoft, all over the place here, they're going through their yearly planning exercises. And they are literally, you know, every team is going through this, what should we do in the next quarter, in the next year? And oftentimes, the way they start is, like, if depending on you know how much your scope is, if you are a single PM, you know you will have a list of features, you know, which you know which you come from this, you know, some of them will be asks from customers, some of things that you probably have had in the backlog for a while. Some of them, you know, would be coming, you know, you look at the telemetry, you figured out something was not right, so you decide what to build. Some of them will be coming from your engineers, you know, who say, you know, we have to do this, we have to fix that, we have to, you know, do whatever. And some of them will be, you know, your competitors launch something and you have to go copy them and you have to, you know, beat them, beat the competition or whatever, right? So oftentimes people will start with, no one starts on a blank page, right? There's always a set of features that, or a set of ideas, product ideas that you start from. So what do you build, right? And here, this is one of my favorite quotes that very early on in my careers, actually the startup I worked at, the CEO at the startup told me, right? He said, you know, you cannot succeed if you don't know where you're going, right? So it's important to know where you're headed, and it's important to know what goals you're trying to achieve when you look at your unprioritized list of features, which might be 20 features, which might be 50 features, and you have no idea where to put your resources on. So, any questions so far, by the way, before we dive into OKRs? No questions? The question is, do we use OKRs at Microsoft? As an organization, Microsoft does not use OKRs. Not like they're used at Google, for example, where they're literally top-down. At Microsoft, certain teams will use OKRs, or certain sub-teams or certain organizations would use this. But we'll talk quite a bit about this. It's a very important tool set to have. So let's talk about OKRs. OKR is a methodology that was invented at Intel, I think. Andy Grove, the legendary Intel CEO, came up with this thing of how basically they drove prioritization and planning in Intel. And from there, it was basically introduced at Google. One of their VCs, John Doerr, who recently wrote a very famous book about it, they introduced this methodology in Google, and it's used in other places also. And the way OKRs work is that you, as the product manager, but it could also be you as a dev manager or you as, you know, as an individual working at any company, you come up with the goal that you are trying to achieve, right? So before, say we are doing our annual planning right now, right? As the product manager, you will state, this is the objective that I'm trying to achieve. And not only that, though, like because if you ask people what their goals are, you know, people will be like, oh, I want to earn $1 million, or I want to be the best, you know, sportsman or whatever, right? It's not enough to, state your aspirations. It's also important to actually state what your key results are going to be. Key results are basically things that, you know, basically the statement that you're making is, this is the objective that I'm trying to achieve, and I will measure this objective by these key results, right? And we'll walk through some of these examples. For example, in very simplistic terms, right? I mean, if we think about currently the football World Cup is going on. If you think about how a soccer team works, right? If you ask them what are your OKRs, that's very simple. They will be like, our objective is to win, as measured by the key result that our goal difference will be positive, right? We will score more goals than the other team. That's very straightforward. But if you, you know, make it more complex, say, for example, you go talk to a product manager for, say, you own email in Microsoft, right? And then someone asks you, well, what are you doing this year? You know, tell me what are you up to? You could be like, oh, you know, I work on email or I want to make email better. But, you know, those things are very vague. Generally, it's much better if you come up with something more crisp. For example, someone who owns email can be like, can say, I want to increase the number of users. I want to increase usage of my feature, as measured by, you know, number of monthly active users who are overall monthly active users, number of monthly active users on mobile app, number of monthly active users on, you know, the web app, or the amount of time that people spend working, you know, using my email, things like that. So we'll talk about that. The difference between objectives and key results is that objectives are generally long term. These are things that that don't change in the short term, that, you know, that are aspirational sometimes. That overall, you know, you can say in vague terms, this is what I'm going towards. But key results are very specific. They follow the SMART terminology, where they're specific, they're measurable, attainable, relevant, timely, meaning that generally when you are defining your key results, depending on the feature, depending on your development cycle, you might have key results for every quarter. You know, I will increase my monthly active users by 2x in the next 3 months. That is a key result. And the good thing about that statement, right, I will increase my monthly active users by 2x in the next 3 months, is that it's measurable, right? So after 3 months, you will know, did you increase your monthly active user by 3 months or did you not, right? It is something that when you tell people, they will know exactly what you mean. If you said, for example, I want to increase usage, people don't know what you're talking about. Maybe you want to increase the number of emails people are sending. Maybe you want to increase how many times people are checking their mails, right? But if you tell them, I want to increase monthly active users, they know exactly what you're talking about, right? Assuming you have defined monthly active user, et cetera. Key results are also... we talked about that they're specific. We talked about that they're measurable. They're also short-term. So you are defining key results for a quarter, a month, and they don't change that often. Like, you want to put forth key results that you think you can achieve, and you have to give a time window. If you don't give a time window, then it's not very useful. Like, it's not, for example, generally in most organizations, if you say, I'm going to launch a feature, you know, that's generally not good enough. Like, you have to tell them, I'm going to launch a feature in the next 2 months with 5 devs working on it. That is something that people can hold you accountable for, that, you know, that is crisp, that people, you know, everyone knows what you're talking about. And actually, do you have any questions? Anyone have questions? You know, no questions? Yes.
Are key results similar to the KPIs, key performance indicators, or are they different?
That's a very good question. So the question was, are key results the same thing as KPIs, key performance indicators, right? So they're not. They're not the same thing, right? And in fact, if you talk to KPIs are another way of measuring performance, right? But if you read, you know, if you read the literature on this, and if you talk to a lot of people who are product managers who've been working in the field for a while, KPIs is something, for example, that are heavily used at Microsoft. At Microsoft, it would be very common for a team to say, we will build feature X, and our KPIs are, you know, ABC. The problem with KPIs could be that, it's important to track KPIs on the feature level, but KPIs don't help you with measuring what you are doing as a team or what you're doing as an individual. Like, KPIs generally are related to a product, right? How is the product doing? KPIs would not generally help you with, let me rephrase that. You can have KPI as part of a key result. So for example, you can say, my key result for next quarter is that I will increase this KPI by 50%, right? But on its own, you know, KPI is not what you are, what your goal is. It could be, I mean, you know, in if you are being less exact, you can say like this is what we are overall targeting for. But it's not a, it's not something that that's measurable in that sense. It's not something that. That's a good question. That's a good question. You can have a KPI also that's part as an objective, right? We want to increase, you know, we want to decrease the error. We want the error rate to be 90% or 90. We want the error rate to be 0.1%, right? But that's the objective. The key result would be, you know, I want to do this. This is how I'm going to do it in this amount of time, right? Actually, that's, as I mentioned, right? I mean, it's something that we do often at Microsoft, and it's not the right thing because we'll just talk about what the goal is, but we won't actually state how we're going to achieve that goal, right? And if you don't state how you're going to achieve that goal, then you can't be held accountable, right? Which is something that happens all the time, right? You will say, I'll increase MAU by, you know, 2x, but you didn't say how you were going to do it. So, you know, at the end of the year, someone will ask you, oh, so did you do it? You know, well, no, you know, so it's not very exact. Yeah, the problem with that is you cannot then have a conversation. Okay, why did you fail? Why did you not, like, why did you fail? What went wrong? What could you have improved? And actually, let's talk about, I'm just going to do all of these in, what's the advantage of using OKRs? And this is we'll go through all of these one by one. Let's think about the example that I started with, right? Imagine you're a team, you're doing your annual planning, and you have a list of features that you gather from your customers, from your from your partner teams, from your competitors. How do you use OKRs to, you know, come up with a prioritized set of features, to come up with a roadmap? This is where, for example, OKRs become very important. If you take the time every year, every quarter, every month even, it's a forcing function to have this conversation with your team, right? For you to write down the objective, that itself is something that you'd be surprised how many teams don't do that, right? Often, if you ask, say, a dev on a team, and they say, hey, what do you do? And he'll tell you, you know, or he or she will tell you, okay, this is what I build. But if you ask them, why are you doing this? Or what is your goal? You'll be surprised how often people will be like, completely, like they would have no idea what you're talking about. It's quite unbelievable, actually, how often devs or product managers or even entire teams, they don't know what they are building towards. So stating your OKRs is a forcing function to have that conversation. You know, to first take the time to plan, right? You get everyone in the room, you state, this is what I'm doing, and this is how I'm going to measure it. And it's a forcing function to have that conversation, to get feedback from the right people. The right people in this case would be your manager, your dev manager, maybe someone higher up in your org. And, you know, it's amazing when you actually start talking about it, right? You as a product manager, maybe you don't have that much insight into the overall strategy of your organization or the overall strategy of, you know, Microsoft, for example, or, you know, whatever company you work on. But when you have that conversation with people around you, they will give you feedback. You know, you are providing them an opportunity to give you feedback on this, right? And oftentimes, it's what would be amazing is that, and the right thing to happen would be that, say your manager or say someone, you know, your skip manager, they have the same conversation with other people who are reporting to them. Because it's very important that your objectives align with the people that you are working around, like the people you are around, and that if you have dependencies on other teams, that they also have the same objective as you. For example, say your objective was to ship a feature. For example, say we talked about email. But say that the email team, you know, did not have the same objective, you're going to fail, right? Which is, this is why when you have this conversation, when you have this, you know, where you have stated your objective and you're having that planning conversation, it becomes an opportunity for you to stake a claim, you know, to basically tell them, are you going to do the same thing? You know, can you please make sure that this is the same goal, that you agree with this goal, and you are doing certain, you know, whatever things to drive towards that goal. And when you have that conversation up front, right, the good thing about this is that 2 months later or 3 months later, they cannot come back and say, hey, I don't know what you're up to. Why did you build this? This is stupid, right? Because then you can tell them, hey, you were in the room. We talked about this. Maybe it wasn't a consensus decision. Like, we can talk about how to arrive at decisions when there's a deadlock. But it's important that people feel ownership of the decision that you arrived at, right? Any questions so far?
If you have enjoyed the episode so far, check out our upcoming live events at productschool.com/events. Use the promo code PRODUCTPODCAST in all caps to get a free ticket to the next event in your city.
Yes, so, I mean, that's a good question. So, product specs are generally, or specs generally are for like a particular feature, right? You're doing one thing. This planning exercise is generally about when you're looking at a group of features, right? And when you're trying to figure out, when you're trying to prioritize between them, right? It would be good. It's a good thing if when you're writing a spec, you should have success metrics at the end. How would you measure how you're doing? And it'll be really good to tie that with your key results, right? That's a great question. I'd say you're building a product, right? The first question will be like, why are you doing this? Which is the first part of your spec. Why are you doing this? And you can always point at, oh, I'm doing this because my stated objective for this quarter is X. And this is how this particular feature ties in with that objective. And this is the particular key result that this feature will help move, right? And actually, that's a good segue to another point on this board which is, it also, OKRs help you to say no to features also, right? You know, someone comes up to you and say, why are you not building this? I have 5 customers who want this. Then you can have that conversation. Listen, you know, we went through this planning exercise. These are our objectives. We took this into account, but the reason we're not doing this is because, you know, these are the other important things that are, you know, the other things that are more important. Sometimes you will find new evidence, which would mean that you won't change your objectives because generally your objectives are more long-term. But it could be that in, say, you started shipping and then 2 months later something, you know, Google releases a new feature and you now have to react to them, right? So, you know, sometimes facts on the ground change and you have to take that into account. But generally, if you are working in a clear framework where you have very transparent objectives and that you have communicated to your teams and, you know, all the stakeholders were involved with that process, it's easier to say no. It's easier to convince your devs what to build. Like if you're a new product manager, I don't know if you had this challenge. I had this challenge when I started out was, you know, I would go to my team and say, we have to build this. And they'd be like, why should we trust you? Who are you, you know, to tell me what to do? When you have a framework that you are working in, people can see, you know, why you are saying something. And then they can do 2 types of things. One, they could tell you why, say they still disagree with you. They will either disagree with you because they say, well, your reasoning about your framework is incorrect. This is how this feature actually helps your goals. So you should go build it. What they cannot say is, oh, this is stupid. Your objectives are stupid. Why are you doing this, right? Because you can push back to that easily and be like, hey, I reviewed this with everyone. You were in the room. You said yes. You can't come back to me and say that this is stupid, right? So we talked about forcing function. We talked about getting, you know, buy-in from stakeholders. We talked about transparency. Another great thing about OKRs or about like planning in general is that it provides focus to the team, right? When you've had that planning conversation, which is usually a series of conversations, there are certain things that generally bubble up, right? When you talk to your skip manager, when you talk to your partner team, when you talk to someone who's much more experienced than you, there will be certain things that will bubble up, and it will actually reinforce the thing in your mind also. Like, say, for example, you thought that addressing customer dissatisfaction was an important goal. But maybe in the conversation that you're having with your, with the group of people around you, you will realize, oh, you know what? This is actually a really big problem, and I really need to go address it. This will provide you focus, and it will provide your team focus. You know, when you go back to your dev team, be like, this is what we are doing. They will be like, okay, this is, now I get it. Now I understand why we are doing this. And they will, in fact, internalize the conversation that you just had with them. And they might even give you a really good feedback about how to better address that problem. You know, it's possible that, you diagnose the problem, but your solution is not that good. You know, if you explain it to your dev team or if you explain it to your partners, they might come to, they might come back to you and say, well, you're right about the problem, but I have a better solution. And that is a very productive conversation to have, right? Instead of, you guys think, he said, or this is what I think, this is what you think, that's not a productive conversation. You have a question.
Yeah. I wanted to ask if you mentioned that OKRs are for a group of teachers, and can you help me clarify if you think OKRs are for product managers and executives, not necessarily for devs and designers, and maybe specs would be more in line with what designers and engineers would be more interested in talking about.
Let me say back to you what you said to see if I understand you, what you're saying. I guess what you're saying is that it could be that your dev or the designer that you're working with doesn't care about your OKRs. They just care about the spec that you wrote for them, right? That could be it. That generally happens when you're working with... that generally happens when you're working with people who are starting out or people who are not that experienced. But you probably know this, that if you are talking to someone who, who's a dev manager, who has like 20 engineers working for him, like they will oftentimes, or depending on where the conversation is, they might not care about the details as much as why you're doing something, right? And that is sometimes a much harder conversation than what exactly, should the font be, 8 or 12, or should it be blue or black? That becomes important at a certain point, but why should it change? Why should it be like this? That is a bigger conversation. And I want to say, I want to restate this, and obviously, like, I'm sure like you guys have, understand this too. Like, this is not just for product managers. Like, this is, in fact, if they're used properly, they can be for anyone, right? It could be like there are certain companies that use OKRs for individuals, like as an individual dev or as an individual marketing person, you have your own OKRs. This is what my objectives are. This is how I will measure it. These are the key results that I will measure them with. And then their OKRs will align with their org's OKRs, and the org's OKRs will align with their partner org's OKRs, and all of them will align with the company strategy, right? So it could be used by anyone. The reason product managers need to be especially good at this is because oftentimes dev teams will look towards their product manager to sort of to provide that like strategic insight or to do that, to know what to build, right? I mean. Oftentimes you'll see devs, they'll be like, oh, just tell me what to do and I'll go do it. That doesn't always happen. But it's a good thing when that doesn't happen. But so product managers have to be especially good at this. And we talked about transparency, we talked about focus, accountability. Hi, sorry, got questions.
So in Microsoft, do you have this concept of themes and maybe initiatives before you even move on to OKRs?
Sorry, say again?
Do you set some kind of themes or initiatives, like let's say for the quarter or for the entire year?
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything like that before you...
For each organization? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Generally, that's how it works. I mean, they might not be called OKRs, but each team will generally, you know...
Themes.
I see. Yeah.
So before you define the objective, do you set those kind of themes initially?
Yeah. They could be the same thing, right? I mean, the theme could be the objective, right? The overall, like, overarching thing of what you are doing. What's an example of a theme? Like, what do you say is a theme? Yeah.
It's like a high-level thing, but
yeah.
You said something like that initially before.
Yeah, exactly. So that example, right? Build a better product or increase usage or do something like yeah. Yeah. That's what we are calling objectives here, right? These are our overall goals. But if you tell people, right, I mean, say you are, you know, you're a manager, there are 50 people reporting to you, and you say, go build a better product, and they'll be like, but what should we do, you know? You have to get more crisp. Even saying that, build a better product is, you know, depending on how, you know, things are, that in itself could be a big, I mean, it depends, right? It depends on the team. Like, you could, for example, be in a situation where, for example, Apple recently released iOS 12, right? And the theme of iOS 12 was, you know what, we're not going to release any new features, but we are going to fix bugs, right? Which is revolutionary for Apple, right? I mean, generally, everyone is like, what are they going to do? What's new, right? What's the new thing that's coming out? So even saying that is a big thing, but then you have to get more specific. Okay, what bugs are you doing? What exactly do you mean by bugs? What do you mean by quality? How do you define quality? How will you track it? How will you measure it, right? Which actually brings us to the point of tracking, right? I mean, accountability tracking. If you just, you know, told your team, go build a better product, how can you come back to them in a year or in 3 months or in 6 months and be like, oh, so did you do it or did you not do it, right? I mean, you can't, right? I mean, the team will be like, yeah, I did this, I did that. Like, but if you have specific goals, like, which is, as we said, like key results, if you had written down your key results, that's something you can track. And the point is not to, you know, use that tracking to, like, for example, decide, you know, who's going to get promoted or to decide if someone is good at their job or not. The point is to provide them focus, and the point is to, you know, have a frank conversation with the team, with the dev, with the org, to see, well, why did you say this was achievable, you know, in the first place? Was your data wrong? You know, that's a separate conversation to have. Or then if we all agreed that this was your goal, why did you fail to achieve that goal, right? And that's another conversation to have, right? But at least it's something to talk about. Whereas, you know, if there was no goal or there was no, like, specific key result to begin with, then you can't even have that conversation, right? Does that make sense? Does the point, am I getting the point across, right? The next thing we talked about makes it easier to say no. This is so useful. Oh my God. Like, if you guys start doing this in your jobs today, like, even if you're not a product manager, even if you are, you know, just an individual dev working on one thing, if you tell people what your objective is, you know, it's become so easier, because then the conversation is, listen, you know, this is what I'm tracking towards. The ask that you are making from me, you know, it doesn't really fit into my goals. Does that make sense? And they'll be like, oh yeah, this makes sense. Then they might initiate the conversation, maybe you should change your goals, you know, which is a more productive conversation than be like, you know, why are you not giving me time? You know, why are you spending time on other things? And then the last thing, and this is a very important point, stretch goals. When we have these objectives and these goals that we are tracking towards, it's important to have goals that are slightly difficult to achieve. You know, if you have a goal that's easy, you will lose focus. the team's morale will go down. You know, people will, you know, people, like if people think it's too easy, they won't put in their best. But if it's slightly harder, right, if it's slightly out of reach, that is a great thing. And in fact, if you tie that with this accountability tracking thing where you're not using goals to decide people's promotions or to decide people, you know, to decide how much bonus they're going to get, but instead to use that as, you know, to have frank conversations of, you know, how the team is doing, how what everyone is working on. If you tie these two things together, that's when the magic happens, you know. That's when, for example, say your goal is not to increase users by 10%, but to increase users by 100%, you know, and you tie that with, you know, accountability tracking and transparency, that's when you will think outside the box. You know, that's when you will try that, you know, make that extra effort to, you know, go after something that is, that's when you will make the extra effort to come up with features that will, you know, get you that 10x growth that, you know, that you know everyone in Silicon Valley loves to talk about, and if you don't have that, then you will have, you know, people who are showing up to work late, and you know everyone is getting sick, and everyone is watching soccer, and everyone is right. So you need that, and in fact, it's like people who work in teams, like we know this, that every team needs a win every so often, right? If you have a big win, you know, every 3 months, every 6 months, that really, and not only do you have a big win, but you actually acknowledge, you know, actually, you know, this is publicly acknowledged that this person did this person did that, you know, that really builds morale, right? And that's, there have been some studies, I have a references section, we can talk about that, but there's studies that showed that you know, improving culture and having stretch goals are much more useful, or what's the term, efficient, in getting out better performance than even like financial rewards. So, yeah. Any questions about it? Does this make sense? Have you? Yeah. Question. Yeah.
And how would this work with devs instead of boost morale? Do they care if the monthly users, do they just go ahead and build features according to specs and not really bother with the results?
Oh, sorry. That's a very, very good question. Let's talk about that. So, you know, the question you asked is, do you think your devs would care if your monthly active users increased by 2x? The amazing thing is that if your devs don't care, then they will not perform at the level at which you want them to perform, right? If you are at a point with your team where, you know, the team just cares about, you know, give me a spec and I will do what the spec says, that's not the best place to be at, you know? And there could be many things wrong with that place. It could be that you're working with people who are just not motivated. It could be that maybe you haven't built that relationship with the people yet. Or it could be that, you know, it's just not a good, like you don't click with your team, right? You want to be, as the PM or as anyone, you know, like you want to be in a team where the people you are working with get it, right? Where your devs have to care that, yes, increasing users is the goal, right? Or increasing customer satisfaction, or solving this problem for the customer. That's what's important. I mean, that's one of the amazing things about Amazon. I mean, I don't know how many of you work at Amazon, but the great thing about Amazon is their customer obsession, right? And if you talk to people who work there, even like devs, or even people who are very far away from you know, business side of things, they will tell you, this is what we're trying to achieve. And that's the amazing thing, right? If you don't have that, you know, a lot of times, one of the downsides about Microsoft could be that sometimes you'll see people who will, you know, say, oh, I don't care, I'll just build what the spec says. That's what's broken, right? That's what needs to change. And that's the difference between startups that make it, for example, and startups that don't make it, right? Question? Yeah.
Isn't stretch inherently like the antithesis of like the A in smart though, the achievability? Like, there should be a fine balance between stretch.
No, that's a good point. In fact, I misspoke when I said every goal should be a stretch goal. There are certain goals that you just have to do, right? For example, we had to release a feature. We had to make it available in sovereign clouds. Sovereign clouds are government clouds that no one has access to. It was a thing that we had to do, right? It wasn't a It wasn't a stretch goal. Like what are you going to do? We just had to do it. And certain goals are like that, right? I mean, fix this, fix this button, that's what are you going to do, right? But you need those stretch goals also to motivate your devs, right? Your devs are not like coders, right? They are engineers. There's a difference. Thank you so much, right? They are not like, their job is not to just write code, right? Their job is to solve problems, right? And you have to keep people engaged that way, right? Absolutely. The thing is, it's not even that I design it to be like that. It's just when you are building features, that's how it happens. There are certain things that you just have to do, right? You can't get away from it. In fact, there will be features that, as such, will not help you increase usage. But, you've committed that, certain customers wants it. There's no way walking around it. You just have to go do it, right? But those features don't excite anyone, right? In fact, your team will leave. Like, they will go and join a different team that's all what you work on, right? Like, I was talking to someone who works on localization. So, like, they have to translate things from English to, like, other languages. And I was like, how do you keep motivated? Like, what do you, like, how is that exciting, right? You have to make things, people, things a bit more exciting. So that when, say you're running hot and the only way to get something done is to work on weekends or stay up all night, you can't ask people to do that, right? But if they themselves are like, yeah, we have to go do this, let's go do it, right? That's what you want. That's the place you want to be at with your team, where your team respects you, and they understand you, they respect your judgment, they know that you are transparent, they know the goal that you are moving towards, and they know that when you do deliver something, it will be recognized. That's when the magic happens, right? Any questions? Any more questions? No. Let's see. How are we doing on time? We already talked about this, but here are some examples. This is an example. We will increase usage. This could be an objective, as measured by the following key results, and then you write exactly what is it, what metric will you move, what's the duration period of time you will move that in. It could also be depending, some dev managers, for example, might define this even more. They might say, for example, we will build this feature in the next 3 months using two devs or two and a half devs, right? Depending on your role in the organization, someone higher up might be like, we will do this putting X number of resources or X amount of money, but you get the idea, right? Similarly, this example is the same thing. We will decrease customer dissatisfaction by reducing app crashes by 2x in the next 3 months, or by reducing the number of support tickets that people file by 3 months. And here, actually, this is incomplete because it doesn't mention how you will reduce the support tickets. Or by improving availability, to 99% in the next 3 months. The reason this is amazing is because people will look at this and they'll be like, okay, first of all, do I agree with your goal? They'll be like, yes, I think the goal of increasing satisfaction is a great goal. Awesome. But I don't think this is the way to do it, and then they will provide you feedback. Maybe reducing support tickets by 3x is not the right thing to do. Maybe it's something else, But by putting this out there, you give people the opportunity to provide you that feedback. And not only that, when you put this out in front of stakeholders, a lot of times you will notice is that people want to help you. All right, people know about something that you don't know about, and they will sign up to do your bidding, you know, basically. But they'll be like, oh, yeah, yeah, we can help you with this. This is how we'll help you. Or you can even be in a situation where people look at the goal that you're targeting, and they'll be like, wow, you are working on something that is much cooler than what I'm working on. You know, can my team, you know, work on your goal, right? Can we help you do what you are doing? This doesn't happen that often, but it happens quite enough. Another amazing thing about writing down your OKRs, you know, about, you know, publicizing them, about being very transparent about them, is that when you do achieve your goals, people really respect you. You know, like the difference between a good PM and a great PM is a great PM calls his shots. You know, like I will go do this. And people are like, oh, this guy is crazy. But then you go do it and be like, holy crap, you know, you're amazing. You know, we trust you. One of my managers gave me this example of when JFK gave that speech about we will reach the moon and we will do it in this decade. The thing is, when they did do it, everyone credited JFK with doing it. They were like, oh, the reason America got to the moon is because JFK said so, right? So, and then everyone knew, like all of NASA, all of the engineers, thousands and engineers and hundreds of thousands of people who were working on the project, they knew exactly what they were working towards, right? Which is an amazing thing, right? This is what you want in your team also. You want every single person in your team to know what you're doing, why you're doing it. And that's when they will show up to work, and that's when they'll actually, you know, do their jobs. Yeah.
Question?
Yes.
I just want to follow up something you talked about. You said when you present the key results, it's also an opportunity for the stakeholders on the team to debate whether they're the right key results or not right. Try to understand, are you able to share some experience when there are like different opinions, how you guys really reach the agreement on, okay, all those three or five are the actual key results? Try to understand that.
No, I mean, that's a great question. You know, when you have different people in a room, right? You have five people in a room, there'll be six opinions, right?
Yeah.
There will happen sometimes where people, there will be legitimate disagreement about a certain goal or a certain key result.
Sure.
And there will be times when, you know, you can talk and there will be complete deadlock, right? A model that is often used to break deadlock is called the OARP model. I don't know if you've heard about this. Owners, approver, reviewer, participant.
Okay.
So OARP. And the idea is that, whenever you're discussing something, say you're discussing a problem, right? There will always be someone who is the owner, right? So for example, if I'm discussing a problem about my feature, I'm the owner. I own this thing, you know. There's always an approver, which is someone who's my boss, who I have to get their act, right? Like, basically, the buck stops with them. I can propose something, but they can always, you know, shut it down, or they can force me to change that. Reviewers are people who have, you know, less authority than an approver, but it's like everyone acknowledges that, yes, they have some, you know, they are a key player, right? But then the difference is that when, you know, things are actually at a deadlock, that's when we say, you know what, you know, this is something that, you know, that's used at Amazon, which is, you know, you disagree and commit. You know, you'd be like, hey, you know, this is your opinion, this is my opinion, but can we just, like, you know, I'm the owner and prover agree on something. Can you just disagree and commit on this? We own the call. We'll do this. Thank you so much for your feedback. But the key thing there is to actually identify who that is, right? And the same thing with participants. Participants are something that people who are giving you feedback, but they have no authority as such, right? Sorry, you have a question?
Yeah, just a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
You were earlier mentioning about the smart acronym and that you think that it should be measurable or attainable.
Yeah, yeah.
Should be relevant. So in the ORAP model, if somebody is reviewing your work, your objective, and they find it unattainable,
yeah,
they might commit to it, but it's unattainable, and yeah, they'll still give you the feedback.
Yeah.
So aren't you like setting up yourself for a
failure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you digest that feedback, and at what point do you take the feedback and say that this is reviewed by somebody who is,
yeah,
who's giving me that it's not feasible or it's tough to,
yeah,
finish in a given timeline?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How do you break that log?
I mean that's like a tough situation, right? Where assuming politics aside, right? Assuming that person is giving you fair feedback, like they think they are giving you straight up feedback. I've been in situations like this, but I won't. Yeah, the way, I mean, it depends on how, like, the relationship that you have with the person. Like, it could be, for example, someone is, you know, making it a stretch goal for you. It's. I think what I do in those situations is I call out, you know, hey, I think this is a very unrealistic goal, right? Or generally what the comment is, it's an unrealistic goal given the resources that I have, right? Then you can have that conversation. Okay, I can achieve this, but, you know, increase the dev team from 5 to 10, right? And then we'll do it, right? But if it's, I mean, if it's something that's you think it's impossible, then, you know, I don't know what to do in that case, right? I mean, that's a conversation for you to have. But you know what the amazing thing is, that because you use this model, you had that conversation up front, right? As opposed to having it after the fact, where, you know, you come back to your manager and say, I increased MAU by, you know, 100%. And be like, oh, that's a joke. I would have expected 500%, right? So it's good that you had that conversation up front.
Would you be taking, at that point, you're going with the morale that, you know, let's try to do this and see if this is attainable.
Yeah.
But would you be documenting that in within your
OKR
as a risk or something which is a constraint somehow?
Yeah.
Is that something that you also tie to your OKRs?
No, that's a good point. So something like that would be in the key results, right? The objective would still be overall, we want to have to increase usage. The way I would do it is, say this is a yearly goal, but after one quarter, it seems like there's no way you can do it. You have to provide transparency back to the person who made that call, right? You have to tell them, listen, you know, like at that time we had misgivings, but the data clearly shows this is not happening. And then they might give you feedback, okay, prove it to me that this is unattainable, right? Which in itself is a great conversation also to have. Why is it unattainable? Do they understand the market differently? Is it even a goal worth having? You know, for example, I worked on a feature where I said, oh, we should increase this by 10x. But we're like, but why? Like, you know, you're not making more money from this. You know, this is cannibalizing your other features. It depends. I mean, I what you're talking about is a tough problem. And it seems like you're talking about something from experience. So
can I ask you
sure.
question?
Yeah.
It's kind of unrelated.
Yeah.
When you're talking about OKRs, every team or every product manager has their specific OKRs, right? It's a situation where kites are flying in the sky, and one is trying to cut each other.
Yeah.
OKR is eating OKRs.
And yeah.
Goal is kind of, you know.
Yeah. You know, there's a famous paper about that. Goals gone wild. But I mean.
At what point do you understand that, you know, the OKRs that product managers are writing are aligned to the North Star, everybody's writing meaningful OKRs,
yeah,
they're not going to be like, you know, 7 OKRs are contradicting this one person's
OKR, yeah, yeah,
a strong team, and they want to give it a push and have something deployed,
yeah,
but it impacts all other 7 teams,
yeah,
adversely.
Yeah.
How do you, is there a way,
yeah,
to kind of manage that upfront?
Yeah, no, that's what you're talking about is is a problem for someone high up in the organization to resolve, right? I mean, it could be because of something in the culture that's broken. It could be because people are not talking to each other. And that's something that, depending on where we are, like someone who is, you know, junior or mid-senior level, they can call that out. But it's really for someone higher up to see that and to appreciate, yes, I mean, you know, six people are doing this, the seventh person is doing something that will break everyone. The thing is, generally, that's not what happens, though. What happens is that, you know, you will know what these people are working on, but you would have no idea what this other team is working on. And then they will break you, but there is no way you could have avoided that because you had no visibility, right? That is a much worse problem than the problem which is, in your case, where there are things that are not aligned. It's also a good question, way to ask the people, right? Hey, why? It seems like these things are contradictory. Why are we doing this? And that's a good conversation to have also, right? I mean, depends on the culture, depends on the openness in your organization. What do you think?
I'm thinking that maybe this is something at a strategy level, you have to think that, you know, are these OKRs contributing and adding value to something, you know?
Yeah.
We talked about teams and other things that,
yeah.
Okay. This is what we want to maybe increase our customer engagement, right?
Yeah.
And there are several ways you can do that.
Yeah.
And there could be a bit of cannibalization, but then you have to also think of where is the strategy? Is it a mobile first strategy or is it a desktop first strategy?
Sure.
Or do we want to make the experience better on the desktop before we roll it out on the mobile?
Yeah.
What exactly are we doing within those options?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And this is actually it's good that we're having this discussion. This is, you know, like one of the first slides that I had was, you know, how do you come up with the features? You know, one of the inputs you should take into account is your org strategy. Where are you headed, right? Overall, not you, but where is your organization or where is your company headed? It's important to take that into account. Sometimes the right thing to do is not to increase usage by 10%, but to kill the feature and build on something else,
exactly.
Right? Yeah. Question, sorry.
So when you define that OKR,
yeah.
I'm just taking an example. There is support ticket for
VMs. Yes.
So if you define OKR, like you said, decrease customer satisfaction.
Yeah.
These are the pillars that may be contributing to that. Right?
Yeah.
So do you again drill that? How are you going to do the support?
Yes, exactly. That's a good point. Actually, that's the comment I made on that one. Depending on who's writing that key result, right? For a feature owner, that's probably not a good key result. The feature owner will probably say, I will do X, Y, and Z features because they will help me drive the support tickets by 3X, right? Whereas someone who's higher up will have a key result, I will do this, and I will depend on my people to do the right things, right? But you're right. I mean, that specific key result wasn't written, or it's not written that clearly. Yeah,
that
exactly.
If you want to make someone accountable,
yeah.
Yeah. This is a high
yeah.
level.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it's you're right. But one thing to notice here is that this itself, it's important to even have this conversation, right? Because like, how else would you track customer dissatisfaction? Like, you can use support tickets. In fact, support tickets is an KPI. That was the first question here, right? What's the difference between KPI and a key result? I think this is more of a KPI. It's not a key result, really. Key result would be, you know, these are the things I will do to do this by this time. But yeah, that's a good observation, a good point. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, the earlier discussion you had triggered me this question. The gentleman said maybe after a while the team comes up like, you know, you couldn't able to deliver the goal or the objective that defined.
So yeah.
One of the key reasons I assume is because of the factors which are unknown at that point of the planning or the
Yep.
So as a product manager, how do you ensure that, or what strategy you follow to ensure that, you know, the unknowns are also taken into account, and what kind of mitigation strategy you should take to change the direction whenever you see that
you're
unable to deliver the product?
So that's a great question. And it's how do you take into account unknowns? And it also depends on the culture of your organization, right? One thing I said earlier was it's better when key results are not used as ways to how promotions or bonuses will be decided, right? Because it gives people the flexibility to, you know, experiment and to be, you know, adventurous. And it also gives them the flexibility to not worry too much about, say, unknowns or things that are out of their control, and instead focus on, you know, 10x ideas that will help them get wherever they are. The way, for example, my team culture is that we are less afraid that things will go wrong, you know, and that's something that comes from the top, right? Literally the vice president or, you know, the CEO has to define that, where, you know, they say, you know, don't be afraid, you know, do amazing things. Because if people are afraid, then they'll be very, you know, conservative. They'll be like, we'll increase usage by 20% because they know this is the slide, right? They'll be like, we put our goals after the fact. You know, this ensures that we always achieve our goals, right? You don't want this happening. This is the opposite of what we want to happen, right? We want people to you know, aim high and achieve that rather than, you know, aim conservatively. But it's also important to call that out. If you are someone who starts using this in your team, for example, right? I think it'll be good to give that disclaimer to your team. Be like, hey, you know, we are doing this because we think it's the right thing to do, but don't fire me if I fail to achieve this, right? That's not the intent of this. And it's not like, it's still a guideline, right? It's not a replacement for, you know, culture. I mean, culture is more important than some of these things.
Could that be mitigated through maybe putting in a contingency plan or something that, hey, we are thinking that this is going to take us 3 months to deliver, but since there are going to be unknowns, this is a turf that we have not explored,
so
we want to build in a contingency plan.
Sure, and that happens all the time, right? Even when, like, say, you ask for a costing from a dev manager, how long will it take to build this feature? People are like, it will take, you know, 60 dev days, but then 20% time for testing, 20% time for vacations and oofs. This is the final estimate, right? What the example you gave is, we're doing something completely new. You know, you have to put something out there, right? We'll do this in 60 days. You know, 2 weeks later, we'll be like, oh, just kidding. This is a much harder problem than we thought. But you're still having the right conversations, right? The key result changed. You know, it's not the end of the world. Everyone knows why the key result changed. You know, they will probably agree with you. If they don't agree with you, you should have that conversation. The important thing is to be transparent about it.
But if you want to change the key result, let's say we were marching towards something else, we found it's too hard. What is an easy you know,
it could be too hard. Maybe you found out it's not the right thing to do. Maybe you found out that's something much more important that's, you know, that you should do. Those things happen. And that's the difference between objective and key results. Objective is long-term goals. Don't change from time to time. Key results. Generally, though, you should do your key results in a way where, like, you should be able to achieve them. If you are missing all of your key results, then you're not very good at planning, right? You need to take that into account. But again, it's a guideline. It's not something that you have to stick to, but it's not something that has to be that religious, you know. And you know, this is how it happens, right? I mean, sometimes you don't meet goals and everyone, and there's sometimes a good reason for it, and sometimes there's not a good reason for it, right? And it's important to have that conversation, right?
Can the OKR methodology be applied to the results which can't be measured in terms of, you know, statistical measures?
What's an example?
So let's say like there is in GDPR compliance privacy rules, right? So there are scenarios where you don't have you can't define in a numerical way that, you know, you have to comply to these rules. You just have to.
You can't? You don't think so?
I mean, not always, right? Yeah. Most of the times you can.
Yeah.
But certain,
I mean, the way
laws where you just have to comply apply to them, but not in a measurable way, right?
Yeah. But in that case, you're right. There are certain, there are cases like that. But
can this methodology be applied?
No, I think it could be. I think it is, in fact, where, you know, where you can make a statement, we will be GDPR compliant by May 30th, right? And everyone then agrees, okay, what does GDPR compliance mean? You have to write that down exactly. And then the conversation is, well, did you make it by May 30th or did you not make it by May 30th, right? Even then there is some sort of, you know, numerical thing there, right? The conversation could be, we'll make it, we'll be compliant by May 30th and five people will work on it, you know? Maybe you achieved it, but there were six people or 10 people working on it. And that's another conversation to have. But you know, things like that, like it's important to, for a key result to know that you are doing something that is specific, right? GDPR compliance is very specific. You know, something less specific would be, we'll be, you know, we'll be very secure and we'll, like, we'll take care about, we'll take care of privacy. You know, that's something that nebulous, right? You don't know what that means. But GDPR compliance is XYZ has to be met, you know. So quickly want to wrap up. When you have your OKRs, when you have your objectives well-defined, transparent, everyone has discussed them, it's generally very easy to prioritize features. You know, if your goal is to increase MAU, so certain features will help you increase MAU, and you know certain features will not, and it'll be very easy for you to draw that line. Okay, these things make the cut, these things don't, and you should have like and all stakeholders should agree with that. And finally, make sure you communicate this. Your team should know what you're building towards. Your partner should know what you're building towards. Your customer should know what you're building towards. Send regular status updates. That's not something that we need to. Maybe that's something that should be in product school. You know how to write a status update, but this is not a Facebook status for a student. but this is like one of the key aspects of a PM's job. Tweak key results if required. Prioritize on an ongoing basis. Just because you said you'll achieve goal X doesn't mean you have to do it if the facts on the ground change. And then the goal is for the PM to be loved by their team. And this is a shot from Michael Scott. I don't know if you guys have seen The Office, but this is the book I was talking about. This recently came out. Goes into a lot of detail about OKRs. You don't need that much detail. Depends on your organization. You have to adapt it, you know, to your organization. You have to do the right thing for your team, right? I mean, maybe what we covered in this presentation won't work for your team. You have to make the right call. You have to build that credibility. There is no replacement for building that credibility with your team. You have. And these are the objectives. Do we have to wrap up now, or any last things, or?
We can do like a final round of
Q&A. Yeah. Okay. We can do more questions. We can, if you have any more questions, comments.
Right. Yeah. Please go ahead. Talk about having conversations, and I just wanted to talk about if you're a really lean team, right? There's almost so much time in an agile process to have these conversations. So like, when you how do you reconcile developing or reconsidering KRs when you're in this like sprint process? Like, do you do it every X amount of time period? Like, if you have a KR that's like this quarter, do you renew them in another quarter, regardless of where you are in the sprint on the feature set? Like, right? So they're not completely aligned. Like, you might be in the middle of a sprint when one of your OKRs is expiring from your last quarter, correct? So
your question is.
It seems to be very time intensive to like get to a vetted set of OKRs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? When you're running a really lean team,
There's
only so many conversations you can have before you have to just run with it, right?
Yeah.
So but, how do you reconcile those two?
So few comments, and maybe I'm wrong and we can talk about that. It's very important to have this conversation. This is one of those things that's time well spent, you know. If people are aligned, everyone knows, you know, what goal you're working towards, everything becomes easier. Literally, right? I mean, yeah, your team is motivated, everyone is, you know, people are not just working in silos. your comment about lean team, the thing is, the good, the advantage of having a lean team is that you can have this conversation very quickly, and actually you could have this conversation all the time. You know, like I work in a startup where, you know, we would be talking about this sort of thing all the time. Everyone knew what goals we were tracking towards. It wasn't a continuous reassessment, because obviously you need a period where people don't plan and execute. Yeah, exactly, right? But the thing is, I also learned that in a lean team, it's easier to have that conversation because, first of all, like usually in startups, like, you know, if you don't do the right thing, you'd be like, the startup would close down, right? So it's, you are forced to have that conversation. You know everyone, people trust you or you trust them, and it's easy to have that conversation. In large organization, it's harder. It takes longer time, but it's also more impactful because generally you will not have this conversation with the 10 devs you are working with. Maybe only your dev manager will come to that. And maybe it'll be 3 dev managers who have like a total of 30 people reporting to them. Or maybe it's like other product managers and other dev managers. And maybe, you know, maybe the goal you are proposing will be worked upon by 100 people or 200 people, right? The more, you know, the more impactful it is, it makes sense to spend time on it. Yeah.
How many times do you have this conversation in your organization?
Yeah. That's a great question. Another thing that you have to take into account is there are things specific to the organization, specific to the team also. The team I work in right now, it takes us about 6 weeks for something to deploy, right? So you checked it in, and for it to go worldwide, it will take 6 weeks for that, which means everything is just very spread out. But I've also worked in teams where you check in, it deploys the next day, right? Even stupid things like that, you know, they define how far ahead you have to plan, right? For me, right now, I have to plan 3 months in advance. Because if I don't, then, like, I'll miss the boat and, you know, someone says, hey, did you ship this? I'll be like, oh, I forgot to do it. And if I do it today, it'll happen 6 weeks later, right? So it depends on things like that take into account. It also, depending on the type of software you work on, if you're working on consumer software, generally your cycles are much shorter. Enterprise software, you know, customers, even if you ship something today, customers are not going to deploy it. You know, they will take 6 months to figure it out. They might even, you know, oftentimes sales are dependent on this, so you have to ship something by a certain time so that, you know, the customer buys something that they would use 2 years later, you know. So all those things factor in. I do this sort of, because I have a lot of engineers reporting to me, which means that I can have a lot of, not report, they don't report to me, but because I have a lot of engineers who work on what I do, I have to do this pretty often because I have just so many things to do, right? But it could be that, you know, maybe if you do it every 3 months, you're fine. For me, I have to do this. I have to do key results every month. Like, I have to. Like, otherwise, otherwise people will have nothing to do. Yeah. Depends on the team. Depends on how many. Depends on a lot of factors, really. Yeah. I mean, what's the experience of people in this room? Like, how often do you plan? How often do you, you know, have this? How often do people bug you? You know, hey, what's on the roadmap? You know, what are we doing next? Huh?
Every day.
Every day. You need to give them bigger features.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments?
I'm just curious, like, why that image? Unagi?
Unagi. But why? I don't know. I was there. You see, you have to think about it. It's funny, after I put this, that's all I was thinking about. And then I was thinking about sushi, and then I was hungry. So.
How did you, just a quick question.
Yeah.
When you start to quantify the key results,
yeah.
Can you share some of your experience? How did you quantify that?
How do I do that?
How, yeah, like your experience and all your approach.
Yeah.
look at a similar feature, the historical data, or have a conversation with your stakeholders, but just share some of your real life experience. Let's say you want to increase, reduce the tickets
three times,
right?
Yeah.
Why not 5 times or 6 times?
So generally what I've seen is that the battle is half won as soon as you even say what you're going to do next.
Sure.
Or like to is half won even by choosing the right goals, right? So for example, in my team, you know, when I said I'm going to people were like, you know, everyone was asking me, hey, build new features. And I pushed back everyone and said, I'm not going to do that. Instead, for a 2 month period, I'm just going to focus on quality. And the way I will measure it is by support tickets. Yes. That itself was like, people were like, whoa, that's interesting. Okay, how will you reduce your support tickets? The question wasn't, will you reduce it by 100%, 200%?
You see the numbers?
Yeah. Say again?
So you mean in that case, the number not necessarily matter, not necessarily critical?
Yeah. I mean, in that case, for example, exactly. It's not that for me. If I had said 100% versus 150%, was less important than me saying, I will focus on quality because I want to bring support tickets down. Because support tickets take a lot of the time of my team, which means they can't focus on feature development. So I just want to go fix this problem before I can focus on other problems, right? And the amazing thing was, here's the thing. Say I had not done that, right? The question would have been, everyone would be like, why are you not building new features? You guys are slow. You're not delivering. What the hell is going on, right? That went away, right? Because we told everyone, we are focusing on quality, and this is the needle that we are trying to move. No, and then people, like, it's amazing when you tell people what the goal is. People are like, yeah, let's do it. Tell me how it's going, right? Tell me how are you doing on this? And they'll be like, good job, you actually reduced this. You know, well done. They forgot about the fact that you didn't build any new features, right? It's these are like small things, but they make a big difference, right? Right?
Also, it's always better to promise less and deliver more than the other.
That's true. So it's a balance, right? I mean, you have to be aspirational, but
not too ambitious.
You shouldn't be. No, but still, like, it's important to have that. Like, say you miss a goal, it's important to have that conversation, right? Say if I said, you know, I'll reduce the number of support tickets, and say they went up, right? People would be like, dude, what are you doing? You know, what did you do for 2 months that, you know, you completely failed, right? And maybe I did the wrong things, you know, and that would be fair feedback. Like, you focus on the wrong thing, you should have focused on XYZ, right? But that's productive because I learned from it. Right, as opposed to, you know, people just saying, I think you should do this, and he thinks you should do that, and she thinks you should do that. Right,
but
that's not productive.
Aren't they a part of the problem because you have reviewed all these OKRs for them?
Yeah.
And when they knew that you were going to march towards solving something else,
yes,
they should have been actively kind of guiding you.
Yes.
Kind of,
yes.
Hey, don't focus on that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Rather than when the boat has sailed and damage is done and other things have gone wrong.
Yeah.
They can't really come to you and say that it's totally your fault.
Yeah.
They are partially accountable.
Exactly. This is an amazing thing, right? Where you, instead of them becoming critics, they'll be like, oh, we should have also put more thought into this, right? And in general, you know, if you don't want to get like someone to criticize you, you should just get their feedback in and then they will support you. That's how these things work. Pro tip. Yeah.
So once you set the OKRs, so then you select between, let's say, projects, XYZ.
Yeah.
So how do you go and make that decision?
Yeah, so, I mean, how would you, right? I mean, say your objective, your VP told you, you know, Salah, I want you to increase usage by, you know, X percent. But then someone else says, hey, can you do this? You know, I'd be like, no, because this is my goal, right? If you don't agree with my goal, go talk to my VP, you know? Don't blame me for this, right?
Like, yeah. So all these projects are like three of these are also aligned with these goals.
Yeah.
So among those three, how do you risk or do you decide between them, what to work on first?
Yeah.
First?
Yeah. I mean.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's not always a zero sum conversation, right? I mean, sometimes if something is important, you will get the resources also. right? It's that's the good thing about large companies, right? So in startups, like, is maybe is actually very zero sum, right? If you don't, we have two people. If they work on this, they cannot work on that. Maybe in large organizations, you can steal people, you can borrow people. You know, if your goal is important enough, and if you cannot fund it, then clearly it's not important enough, right? So, yeah. Are we on time? At time or?
Maybe one more question.
Yeah. Yes.
Why did you move from management consulting to product management?
We can talk about that. This is not part of this. Management consulting is not fun at all. How did I do it?
Yeah.
I think the startup in between helped a lot, you know, because otherwise it's depends on the company. Like there are certain companies that you can make that switch easily. Like Amazon is like that. They hire business people all the time. Microsoft is not like that generally. You know, they prefer a technical background. Google is even more so. They even prefer even more of a technical background. So it depends. Management consult, in general, with service business, your impact is directly proportional to the amount of time you spend, you know, whereas in product and in engineering, you can have 100x impact, right? You build something once and, you know, a billion people use it, right? Versus management consult, you solve a problem once for one customer for that period of time. That's
it.
Yeah.
Scalability of a product, right?
Yeah.
And also the thinking that goes in management consulting is quite different
from
product management, I believe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even though like there are examples of people who were management consultants and then went on to be very successful. Like even Sundar Pichai was a management consultant and then he became a PM, I think, at Google. Yeah. For Groom. That's right. Good product to work on. Yeah, I think we're done.
That actually brings in a lot of customer empathy.
That is true.
Understanding the processes.
Right. Yeah.
So that, how do you equate that or relate that with the product management? Really advocate the customers, bring the customer face on the table and talk on that. That's kind of
That's one of the. I mean, that's the one thing that your dev team solely, I mean, you are their savior when it comes to customers, right? Like, they're not talking to a customer, you're talking to the customer, right? If you are not good at talking to a customer, then your team is screwed, right? They will not do the right things. If you don't get the signal right, if you are not able to figure out what the problem is, if you're not able to be a good advocate.
Also, the same is true if you put it properly translate it to the
UI. Exactly. Right? Exactly. Same thing. Yeah.
So
you're right.
In this case, would a person with a technical background would be more helpful than, because, you know, understanding the technicalities and translating it to customers is quite easy. I mean, I wouldn't say it's more easier, but that way it is more easy, right? Because understanding the customer's language and translating it to a developer is kind of difficult, I would say.
Yeah.
Because as a product manager without technical background, you don't really understand how complex it is to develop in the system.
Yeah.
Whereas a person with a technical background, they can actually understand.
I mean, it depends on the product, right? Now, what if you're working on AI, right? And it has to be you have to go very deep into it. Depends on the product, depends on the customers that you work with, depends on the person also. Yeah. I think good. Thank you, everyone. Hopefully you liked it, learned something. Please give me feedback if there are things I can improve.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. If you want to know more about our courses and next course, visit productschool.com. Stay tuned for the next episode to learn more about the secrets in product management.